You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, for supporting this season of our podcast. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kaltbach label. Cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kaltbach cave for superior flavor unlike anywhere else in the world. Hey, everybody. Happy belated Valentine's Day and Galentine's Day. I'm here attempting to post a story live on on Instagram and do the show at the same time, and it is seriously testing my abilities, so bear with me as I hit send to our story. I'm always amazed at people who do this so effortlessly, and that is not me right this second. So, all right. So anyway, where was I? Happy belated Valentine's Day and Galentine's Day, if you celebrate those holidays. I couldn't help but notice on Instagram that Valentine's Day has become like the Winter Olympics of baking. Perhaps you noticed that too. There were so many brilliant creations in my feed, and I need to give a special shout out to the bakery lady, Chelsea Kravitz, if you are listening. We were really touched by those beautiful Cherry Bomb and Bomb Squad sugar cookies that you made. We've had a fun week. We had an event Monday night at the brand new 420 Blackbirds location in Brooklyn on Dean Street. You know Melissa and Emily Elson. They're the sisters who created 420 Blackbirds. They have a beautiful cookbook and several beautiful shops now. They do the special event called Pie with Authors. So they invited us to come by and talk about the cookbook and our 86 This project and a lot of other things. And it was a really fun night. I got to have a slice of their matcha custard pie, which I absolutely love, and some pink cider. I think it was Bad Seed cider, maybe? I'm blanking on the name, but it was really, really good. And I always love seeing those two. And we got to meet lots of members of the Bomb Squad, like I'm Maya Papaya, who I only knew from Instagram, and I finally got to meet Maya. Thank you for coming by. And then Lada from Eat Chic Chocolates. That's the name of the brand. Eat Chic Chocolates came by. And she brought us some presents, which we always love. And she brought me these pink white chocolate nut butter cups. They were stuffed with almond butter and cherry chia jam. And I know that sounds crazy. So again, it was pink white chocolate stuffed with almond butter and cherry chia jam. And I was like, that's a little weird. But I love peanut butter cups more than anything. Well, there are other things I love more than that, but that's pretty high on my list. And I tried these two things. I tried the two peanut butter, the two cups that were in there. And I was like, I think Lada made these just for me. They were that good. So Lada, thank you. We really appreciated you coming by and bringing us those goodies. And to Melissa and Emily for hosting the evening. So what else? We have a special event tonight. One of the guests on today's show is Jarell Guy. She is the author of the new cookbook, Black Girl Baking, and she will be at Smith Canteen tonight in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, from 5 to 7, signing her book. And we will talk to her in about 20, 30 minutes. So hang on if you want to hear from Jarell. But right now, we're going to talk to our first guest. So, nothing in your closet? What about your pantry? How about a banana peel jumpsuit or a frilly fennel frond frock? The artist Gretchen Roars set the internet on fire when she started mixing her funny face era sketches with pictures of fruits, vegetables, and even oyster shells. She's here today to talk about her unlikely career, why her veggies went viral, and her new book, Edible Ensembles. Gretchen Roars, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, Carrie. Thank you so much for having me on. This is like the most special thing to be back at Cherry Bomb.
Oh.
You guys were one of the first ones to feature me, actually. So it's kind of, it's all coming full circle.
I remember we did a really fun story on you and we featured, I don't know, like 10 or 12 of your amazing illustrations. But, you know, people talk about things going viral all the time. And sometimes, you know, they do. Sometimes they don't. You just took the internet by storm. I mean, everybody wrote about you. Everybody posted your pictures. People just went, I don't want to say it, but bananas. They did. They went bananas. And was that banana jumpsuit the first thing? Or it is that just the first thing that caught people's imagination?
It was one of the first ones. But yeah, that was the one that really, I think, caught people's eye just because it was so bizarre and definitely a little bit different than what anyone else had done before. So that was the one where people started sharing it and reposting it. And so, yeah, it was that was the one that kind of started it all.
So because we're all multimedia creatures right now, if you're listening to the show, grab your phone, or if you're on your desktop, go to G Roars on Instagram. It's G-R-O-E-H-R-S.
Exactly.
Right?
Wow.
Got it.
I can't believe you got that. No one can.
I've been following you forever, you know, and yeah, go there and take a look, because you might not totally get what we're talking about. You really have to see what Gretchen does to sort of understand this. And I think it'll be fun for you to look at her Instagram feed while we talk about these. So how... Let's go back. I always love to start with where people are from and what their childhoods were like. So you're in San Francisco now, but where did you grow up?
I come from pretty humble beginnings. I grew up in a farming community in central Missouri, where despite, you know, being surrounded by farmers and really lush farmland, the produce that we were eating as children was still, like, you know, bought from Walmart. And, you know, to be quite honest, we were living kind of in a food desert. And so that's really where my passion for food started when I was, you know, a rebellious teenager. My parents didn't really care so much about my goth phase or my Bob Dylan phase. They were like, you know, trying to be vegan or vegetarian was really where I could, like, get their attention, because, you know, if you're trying to cook for a family, that was one way that I could kind of rebel and be like, we're not going to eat steak tonight, or we're not going to have hamburger helper. We're going to have, you know, we're going to try to cook quinoa. And, you know, they were like, where is that from? And this is, you know, 2006, 2008. So, it was, growing up there was definitely shaped my adventurous side when it came to food, because food was a way for me to escape.
I love that, like, quinoa was more threatening to your parents than, say, Marilyn Manson.
I know. It's so funny. They're like, well, this is
like
a phase.
Quinoa, how do we even pronounce that? Quinoa's a phase?
Yeah. Sorry.
So, okay, so you're rebelling, you're making alternative grains and stuff.
Alternative grains, yes. Instead of alternative rock, alternative grains. So, and my parents were lovely and definitely entertained, you know, my experimenting with Greek yogurt and, you know, lentils. So they were, but it still kind of perplexed them. So at the time, though, when I was in high school, I was working at the local library, and every week we would get a new cookbook in, and, you know, we'd get the New York Times and the New Yorker and see, you know, these amazing food recipes and hear about what people in New York were eating. And so that also kind of fueled my desire to go and use food as a tool for exploration.
And so tell me about your artistic leanings. When did those start to become apparent?
I think I've always kind of leaned toward communicating more with visual mediums than speaking. So
I have to cut in for a second. I have to admit, I just fell into a trance.
Yeah.
Because people don't know this, but we record at Heritage Radio Network, which is located in the back of Roberta's Pizzeria. And there is a table right next to the window that looks out onto the dining room. And people just come and see, these kids are like waving at us right now. And people just stare and get served their food. And like this little kid who's trying to make us crack up right now. But anyway, so they're eating as we're talking. And this one table just got served a calzone that is the size of my head. And it looks like the best calzone I've ever seen in my whole life. And they served it and you were talking and I was like...
You're distracted. Very understandably distracted.
Can you see what they're eating? It's amazing.
I'm a little bit...
Anyway.
But... Oh, so that does it good.
So, okay, food desert, art. So when did you start drawing?
Since I was a kid, I think. That was what I immediately took to, and you know, it was easier for me than talking. I was never very good at pronouncing words and had a bit of a speech impediment. So it was a way for me to kind of communicate in a more confident way. And so that carried me throughout, you know, high school and into college, where I studied fashion design. And that's, believe it or not, where I got more of a strong interest in fine art and illustration rather than like the actual construction of the clothes. So that's kind of where the fashion leaning began.
Where did you study?
At a small liberal arts women's college in the Midwest called Stevens, and they're super tiny, and they focus on just a handful of majors, you know, fashion design, theater, even equestrian studies. So it's like, it's a school for weirdos, but like, I mean that in the best possible way.
It sounds like heaven.
It was great.
Really sounds amazing.
My mom would joke that it's called Stevens College SC, but she would call it summer camp. She was like, Gretchen's going off, you know, to school to sew and paint and ride horses. And isn't that lovely?
So you probably regret that you ever left there. Yeah. So where did you go after college?
Well, my junior year of college, I landed an internship at Vogue, and that kind of changed everything to me, because they learned that I could do Photoshop, and so they thrust me into the art department, and they were like, you're going to work on Vogue.com, go. And so I was like, got it. And while I was there, I was introduced to this whole other world of computer design and website design and app design, and I was like, wait, no one ever told me I could do this. And I kind of took to it very easily, and so by the time I graduated, I was like, I'm never sewing another garment in my life. I want to go make apps. And I was really convinced that I could go out to Silicon Valley and make tech bros care about fashion and the people that like fashion. And so I hitched a ride out to Palo Alto with a friend that was moving out there to go to Stanford, and slept on some couches and, you know, failed pretty miserably to make Silicon Valley care about fashion. But I did get a job at, you know, a small shopping startup, and then that kind of propelled me into the world of user experience design, which is what I do during the day.
Ooh, explain what that means. User, what, say that again?
User experience design.
Okay.
Basically, you know, when you open up Instagram and you see those flashing circles around stories and you immediately want to tap on those and, you know, make the circles go away. That was a really good user experience designer that was like, how can we make these maniacs check this app 17 times a day, which is definitely what I do.
And then what came after that?
So as a way to kind of stay connected to fashion and art and, you know, give my brain some creative exercises while I had this kind of very technical day job, I would draw on the side, and often draw what I was, you know, around what I was eating for lunch, or, you know, doodling during meetings and I was not listening. And so it was, drawing became a way while I was in tech to kind of stay true to what I studied and what I actually really love. But it was nice because I didn't have to financially depend on the fashion industry, which can be so difficult to really make it in and so stressful. And so that's, again, where these drawings started, was just out of a fit of boredom and being weird. So, yeah, that's where it all started.
Now, meanwhile, you're in the Bay Area. Yes. And you're not in the food desert anymore. You're
no.
in what? Is
paradise.
Exactly, heaven. Mm-hmm.
It is remarkable. The produce in California is, I almost feel like their restaurants don't even need to exist out there because the produce is so good. You could just have so many farmers markets on every block where you can go and eat a tomato 365 days a year. That's insane. And it's all California.
Anytime I'm in California, I wonder why all chefs don't just move out to California, because the produce is so incredible compared to what we get here. And, you know, in the summer we have exquisite produce. And if you eat seasonally in New York and in this region, you can do well and have beautiful things. Mm-hmm. But nothing compares to that farmer's market in,
right.
What is it, at the at the wharf?
The ferry building.
At the ferry
yes.
building, yeah.
So good.
In San Francisco. I mean, that is just a magical experience. And any of the Los Angeles farmers markets.
Yes.
I mean, even the Palm Springs farmers market. I was
actual
in Palm
desert,
Springs last
yeah.
year, an actual desert. Yes, they had just incredible produce.
Yeah, well, one of the things on that note, New York does so well, and I've been reminded of this while I'm here for a few days. The chefs in New York are so much more creative with the ingredients because they're kind of forced to, you know, it's like the ingredients are still amazing and, you know, top notch, but they kind of take a more interesting approach to putting things together, whereas in California, it's like, this is a, you know, a plate of, you know, vegetables and meat, and it's kind of simple, which, you know, it doesn't need to be any fancier than that. But coming back to New York, it's like, oh, people really think about the architecture of what they're creating to serve to people.
Well, one thing you do have in San Francisco and Oakland and Berkeley that we don't is just an incredible female chef scene.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's really changing in New York, which is great, but it just doesn't compare to out there. I mean, everybody, Preeti Mistry and Tanya Holland and
Gabriella Camara, Kala and Dominique Crin.
And Domenica Rice.
Yes.
It's Cosecha.
You can
Alice
inadvertently.
Waters.
Yeah, you could inadvertently, you know, support only female run kitchens on accident. Like, it's really inspiring to see the women kind of taking a lead, not only at creating, you know, these like visionary menus, but also on treating the staff and the workers at every end of the restaurant spectrum, from the people that clear the tables to, you know, the people that are running the front of house. They treat them with so much respect and give opportunities to people who, you know, are traditionally like not allowed kind of reentry to society, like ex-felons and, you know, people that are trying to get back into or just trying to make a living for themselves. I think female chefs are just more empathetic by nature and want to see that everyone in their kitchen is happy and healthy. And I remember Gabriella Camara was talking about how she was so devastated that one of her servers had a really bad back injury, and so she was making sure that he was like okay for like several weeks and like taking him food and like, you know, like paying him still so that he wouldn't be financially devastated by that. And I was just so struck by that. You never, not to, you know, bang on me, but you never really hear about that happening in a male kitchen.
Things are changing.
I hope so.
We're going to see a lot of radical change in the restaurant industry over the next few years. And I really think it's those seeds that were planted in the Bay Area. So you're lucky to be out there. So when did you, I want to go back to the aha moment though. Mm-hmm. So when did you start to put food and fashion together via your illustrations and your creations?
That's a great question. So I think I've always seen, you know, when you see like a smiley face out of like a chair, like of some water pipe on the wall or something, you're like, oh, that looks like a face.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, that's a thing. People see it. Or like
maybe
a
you
sink.
See things. Like I just heard something. I think it was a joke on Wait, Don't Tell Me. But like when people see the Virgin Mary in a chicken McNugget,
exactly,
for example.
Exactly like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't had one of those moments yet, and I'm kind of devastated by that. Like, I feel like I've had so much toast in my life. So much expensive toast, and I haven't had my Jesus moment.
You've yet to see the Lord and Savior in a piece of burnt toast, but you do see. So you see things in, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I just see things in a funny way. But
well, you're an artist.
I guess I'm an artist.
You see things differently.
Yeah. So in fashion, you learn to recognize these very classic shapes, and it's all about manipulating, you know, a single piece of fabric to fit over the curves of a woman's body or a man's body. And so in that, you kind of see these shapes over and over again. And if something in your everyday life takes on that same shape, it's like, oh, that kind of looks like that. So it's, you know, when that there was that like watermelon dress phenomenon this summer, that was so funny,
which I didn't even know about until I read the year in review in InStyle magazine.
Oh, no
And they
way.
Were like the watermelon dress. And I was like, how did I miss that? Explain to people like me who didn't know what that was.
It was so funny. I had a bunch of followers, you know, send this to me on Instagram, and I thought it was so funny. But this, I guess it was a mother had cut a triangle of watermelon and held it up in front of a camera around her daughter, and so it looked like her daughter was wearing a dress made out of watermelon due to the perspective. And they were just like really funny and cute, and it went very viral. I would say way more viral than I am. And that sort of thing, that sort of thinking is, I just think it's hysterical. And yeah.
You learn all the important things when you listen to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Yes, watermelon dresses.
Exactly.
Well, they might be on their way out. I don't know.
So back to you.
Yes.
How did you start to combine food and fashion?
That, again, started when I was just totally bored at my day job and, you know, just mindlessly doodling, and I thought it'd be really funny to share it with some friends, you know, these like bizarre little sketches around food, you know, someone wearing a palazzo pants made out of pea pods. And I sent it to some friends on the East Coast, actually, in the winter. And they were just like, how do you have peas in January? Like, this is insane. And I threw that. Then I was like, oh, maybe it's kind of funny. So I put it on my Instagram with my total of 31 followers. And I think I got 3 or 4 likes, which is really good for me. So I kept creating them, and gradually more and more people started finding them, and it kind of just took off. And then I was like, well, I can't really post any more selfies, so those got to go.
So tell me technically how you make them, because the person is drawn. There are hand-drawn elements,
yes.
But is the fruit and veggie and oyster shells and everything else you use, are those photographs, or are you working in Photoshop?
I'm actually just laying down food on a sketch pad, and then I sketch around it. It's very lo-fi.
Really? And you take a picture of that?
I shoot it on an iPhone, and if there's really bad shadows, I'll clean that up in Photoshop. But yeah, it's like, it's very simple. Like, if it were any more complex than that, I'm way too lazy to, you know, put that much time into it. So kind of the beauty of it is I don't allow too much time on dwelling on, you know, these complex gestural like things. They're just very simple and kind of hint at, you know, the essence of a woman, rather than like making it too labored over. You know, it's something that just allows your mind to fill in the rest, which I think is kind of fun.
I really would love to see a video of you.
I think they're floating around somewhere.
I'm going to go on YouTube later and try to find one.
Go down a rabbit hole.
But that's really fun. I had no idea you just put the produce or whatnot down and just draw around it.
Yeah. Well, I've gotten, you know, when you are at a restaurant and someone's like very obviously photographing their food, it's like a much more annoying way when someone's like, the chef is probably like, well, what are you doing to my peas when you take them off the plate? But
so when you go to the farmer's market, are you sort of thinking like a chef then, that you have to seek out the most beautiful produce?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's almost overwhelming for me to go to somewhere like the San Francisco Ferry Building or, you know, the Berkeley Bowl. It's a sensory overload. There's so many smells and the colors and the shapes. And I'll just like look for certain shapes that are reminiscent of a certain style of dress that I'm thinking about doing, or maybe it's I see a shape and I'm like, oh, that could totally be turned into, you know, a pair of pants or something. So yeah, the farmer's market is like the number one place I go for inspiration.
That's so funny. And do you go, I'm trying to get into your brain when you're walking through a farmer's market, are you separating things between, oh, I just need some carrots to cook with, versus, oh my God, that's the most beautiful Romanesco I've ever seen in my whole life, I have to turn that into a dress.
Well, the beauty of it is it's kind of forced me to try some new things that I never would have otherwise bought at the farmer's market. You know, I might be too scared or just like, I don't know what to do with eggplant. And so by virtue of getting all of these ingredients to photograph, I then have, you know, leftover material that I can't just throw away. So there are a lot of like vegetable medleys that happen in our household. But yeah, the California produce can be like really bizarre looking. And they have all of these heritage varieties and, you know, heirlooms that you just don't see at even Whole Foods. And so that definitely opens up my eyes to like even more things.
That's amazing. So are you super into fashion in your, in real life and you're just during the day?
I am. Well, I think everyone can appreciate fashion because, and this is how it's so similar to food, I think, is because it's something that everyone interacts with every day. Like every day you get up and you get dressed, and every day you fix yourself something to eat or you go to a restaurant. And so that's what I really love about both of these worlds, is it's not necessarily like, you know, high art or even high fashion. It's like these everyday experiences that we get to like, you know, we have this choice to make something really special every day. And it could just be, you know, wearing a certain dress makes you feel amazing and gives you confidence, or, you know, you find refuge in like having a special cup of, you know, a cappuccino in the afternoon or something. And so that is, that's really what I love most about being kind of straddling these two worlds.
So is this your day job now?
It's not quite. I'm a little bit hesitant to make my art financially support me, because I think the moment I do that, it's introducing this element of like survivalist. And I am not the type of person that can easily handle having my art, you know, support me. So I'm a little bit scared to do that. So I still work a day job, and I'm getting ready to start at this amazing shoe company, actually. So it actually is in fashion, but it's more on the tech side. So they're trying to create a sustainable shoe called Rothy's, and they're very, very cool. But they make shoes out of recycled water bottles. So kind of still in the same startup atmosphere in San Francisco, but I'm getting back into fashion. So it's very exciting.
That's great. Congratulations. But it's funny, you know, everybody's got their side hustle. All good cherry bomb girls have their side hustle.
It's so important. And I think it provides so much meaning to your life. And I think a lot of people are just like, how do you manage that? Or like, how did you get started doing that? And I think my advice to anyone that's kind of craving something else in their life is to just that weird thing that you don't even tell people about that you're really into, like, make it something, you know, put it out there. And it seems scary, and it seems maybe like no one's going to care, but you don't know until you try. And so I feel, you know, like if everyone hates it, you'll know right away. But the upside is infinite if you, you know, just kind of take that leap and try something.
Take that leap, everybody. That's the advice from Gretchen Roars. So Gretchen, you're on your book tour right now, and
yes.
I think you have a signing tonight, right?
I do, at Bloomingdale's on the Upper East Side. So I think it's from 6 to 8.
In Manhattan.
Uh-huh. Yes, on the second floor. So come say hi. I'll draw a portrait of you if you
and
come.
And today's date, we're recording this on Thursday,
yes.
February 15th. So if you listen to this after, don't go to you could still go to Bloomingdale's, but Gretchen...
I won't be there.
Won't be there. Where are you doing any other signings or any other appearances?
Yeah, so this wraps up my New York trip, but then I'm heading out to LA for the Food Book Fair, and then San Francisco's coming up in March. And yeah, stay tuned. There will be a lot of signings, I think, around the country.
Can people go to your website?
Yes.
To find dates and whatnot?
Exactly. Exactly. And just follow on Instagram.
All right. Well, Gretchen, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much, Carrie. This has been great.
Congratulations. I'm thrilled you have a book.
Okay. Thanks.
We will be right back after this word from Emmy Cheeses from Switzerland. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Do you know about Emmentaler? Of course you do. This is the original Swiss cheese, world famous for its distinctive holes and extraordinary flavor. Emmy's special Kaltbach Emmentaler AOP is cave-aged in Emmy's 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave to produce an earthy, intense nuttiness and herbaceous woodiness. Whether you are snacking or party planning, serve your Emmentaler with dried apricots, rosemary sprigs, caramelized onions, or bacon, and pair it with black tea or an oaked Chardonnay, a Cabernet Sauvignon, or gin and tonic. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. Hey, Bomb Squad. Visit the Cherry Bomb online shop for all things Bomb Squad. We've got signed copies of the Cherry Bomb Cookbook, which features more than 100 recipes from 100 of the coolest women in food. Need a great gift? How about a gift subscription to Cherry Bomb Magazine? And we've got those collabs, like our Headley and Bennett apron. Visit cherrybomb.com for more. Hey, everybody. We are here with our second guest of today's live show, Jarell Guy, creator of the blog Chocolate for Basil and author of the brand new cookbook, Black Girl Baking. Jarell is here to share the inspiration for her book, give us some vegan baking tips, flax eggs, anyone, and talk about how Black women are taking the food world by storm right now. So, Jarell, this is the first time we've ever met.
Yes.
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. This is the best invitation that I could have gotten.
It's so nice to meet you finally. And I've been cooking up a storm from your cookbook.
Really?
You won't believe everything I've been making. but it's been a lot of fun. And I cooked with flax eggs for the first time.
That is phenomenal. How did you feel?
It was fascinating. I mean, want to explain to everybody what flax eggs is?
Yeah, it's basically just ground flax seed, and then you add water, and it creates this, I usually add warm water, and it creates this really gelatinous you know, like concoction that is very similar to the texture of egg when it's beaten.
So I made your ginger snap cocoa cookies last night with the flax eggs. Mm-hmm. And it was so cool. You literally just, you pour the golden flax seed. Mm-hmm. I used Bob's Red Mill. Mix it with water. And in 20 minutes, it just becomes this kind of viscous slurry, I guess you can call it. But Vitor is coming in here. What did we... our engineer just came in. Dave's on vacation today, so Vitor is filling in. So for all those...
A copy of the book.
All those DJ Dave fans, he's on vacay. So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
You live in Boston right now, but
you
did not grow up in Boston.
No, not at all.
Where are you from?
I'm originally from South Florida, a small town called Lantana Beach. And I usually tell people like Palm Beach County, West Palm, because it's so small. And I was also between there and Delray Beach, which was where my grandmother lived, and all my aunts and uncles. And then I went to school in West Palm Beach, so just Palm Beach County. It was an interesting place to grow up.
What was life like?
Well, for my family, there was a lot of culture there, you know, like it was really rich. You had, we lived in a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood. But my grandmother, you know, that was mostly, African Americans living there. And where I was, my mom, she was from Guam. You know, so she came from an island and she came into my family, my dad's family, without her sister or her grandfather or anyone with her. So she came alone. And that was kind of a culture shock for her because it was just, you know, a sea of black people, you know what I mean? And it wasn't necessarily a welcoming space for her, you know, because it was, I think Palm Beach County, if you've ever been there, is very segregated. You have very rich people near the water, you know, and as soon as you cross over the bridge, you know, it's kind of, you know, the poorer areas. So that's where we were. you know, there was that tension, and I saw my mom kind of fight through that, and I just kind of sat back and felt that discomfort, you know. So it was interesting in that way because she wasn't welcome in the family, but she was tough about it, you know, like she kind of absorbed that.
Did you inherit much of that from her?
I think, I definitely did.
Culinarily, Guam has its own thing going on. How did that work its way into your family?
Well, she brought like her comfort foods with her when she came.
Which were?
So a lot of Spam. A lot of Spam. So we had Spam soup and rice. We had a lot of canned food. And I know that was because of like her upbringing. Canned food. We had Fenadini. It's like a salsa, I guess. It's like an onion salsa that's the base is soy sauce and vinegar. So it's really tangy. It's really salty. And we put it over rice. We put it over anything. And I know that, like, whenever we would make any American food, we always seasoned everything with soy sauce and vinegar, you know? And it just balanced it out really well. So that's just, to me, that's what completes any stew or any dish. And it's really good. You should try it.
Now, jump ahead to your blog.
Yeah.
Chocolate for Basil. When did you start the blog? Why did you decide to become a blogger?
Well, I've always loved food. Yeah. Like it's been my comfort. I think when I was a little girl, I didn't have a space. I didn't have a way to communicate with people because I was very shy. I was very introverted. I was very afraid of upsetting anyone because I think these were things that my dad taught me, you know, like he, you know, stressed that I had to, you know, kind of contain myself and it was a protection thing because this is how he was raised, you know, he had a difficult upbringing. He saw things that traumatized him. And so all he knew how to do was, you know, like pass that information on to protect me. But I realized that kind of just limited me, you know, and it limited the way that I could interact with people. I was always just very reserved. But food, like, food just gave me this, I don't know, it was so safe, you know? It was safe. And I remember, like, because my dad was very traditional, like, traditional Southern, he didn't really want to part from that. And so when my mom brought and introduced her food from the island, he wasn't really interested, you know? Like, he didn't really care to, like, adapt to that. And so, but I wasn't a picky eater because food was just really comforting to me. And my mom saw that in me, and she loved that about me, you know? So that was the way that we bonded, you know? We bonded over, like, yolky egg sandwiches and, like, just, you know, anything. Like, I didn't reject anything. And I saw that was love, you know what I mean? Like, it was just really, I don't know, a safe space. Yeah.
So how did you decide to turn that into a blog?
So years and years later, after me being obsessed with food and, like, practicing and, like, cooking, and I went to art school. That was another.
Where did you go?
So I was in art school in middle school and in high school, and then I went to college at Rhode Island School of Design. So just all my life.
The famous RISD.
yeah, really lucky that I got to go there, but all my life. And while I was in school, and I loved, okay, so the thing that I took from RISD, it's an amazing school, but once I graduated, I realized why it's so amazing. And I think it's because they teach you to find what you're obsessed with, you know, like what drives you, like what you want to talk about all the time. And every time I would do any project, it was always about food, my relationship with food. You know, like, I remember making this teddy bear out of, like, I don't know, animal products. And I was a vegan at the time, and I was, you know, just making some kind of commentary on, like, how difficult it was as a vegan to kind of separate myself from these food memories that I had as a kid, you know? Like, there was this pull to still, you know, like, celebrate those things that made me who I was. But then, you know, like, I still wanted to keep that label, you know, because this was my new identity. And so I remember, like, making commentaries about that. I remember I got to go study in Rome, which was an amazing experience. And I remember, like, my concentration was basically, like, looking at architecture and saying, oh, I see food in that. So then I would, like, paint the food in the architecture, and it was like this really, like, whimsical, like, fun concentration.
Wait, it's so funny because Gretchen Roars, who was the guest before you, is also an artist, and you two are talking about some really similar things, and I'm bummed you two didn't get to meet each other.
I said hi when we were outside, but yeah, we definitely have to.
But you're both kind of on the road for your books, so maybe you'll cross paths at some other point.
Definitely.
So Rome, what was that like from a food perspective?
I mean, it was a lot of pizza, you know, a lot of pasta. It was amazing. I don't know. I remember cooking. I remember hosting these dinner parties and getting people in the program involved. And I would send out emails and I would say, hey, guys, like, I'm making, like, you know, it was like traditional Southern tonight. It was like cornbread and mashed potatoes and, like, you know, like, like apple pie. And I would get everybody to chip in $10, and I would just buy all of these ingredients, and I would be in that old kitchen, like, with the, you know, like super, like, busted stoves, cooking, and I had my best friend with me, and she was, like, chopping onions, you know what I mean? It was just, like, the funnest time, and then we'd all sit around at the dinner table and eat, and that was, like, my way of, like, making that program mine, you know? Yeah.
And then Chocolate for Basil was born.
Chocolate, that's a long story, Carrie.
Maybe we don't have that much time. We might have to save that for your next visit. Just tell me what the name means. I know there's there's chocolate mint. Is there chocolate basil?
No. It's chocolate for basil.
No, I know. Oh. But you know how there's, like, chocolate mint and there are all those different strains of basil?
Yeah, there is a chocolate basil.
There is a chocolate basil, right?
So, yeah.
But that's not what the name is.
That's not what the name is
about.
No, it's really, I think it started corny, and Eric hates the story. My boyfriend, he hates the story. But it basically happened because I met up someone when I was in Italy, and I came back. And the relationship was really bad. It was just such a, you know, like, young relationship. And I started the blog because I was trying to escape that relationship, and it became me just writing about food and like everything that I loved about food. But the basil part was because he represented basil and I represented chocolate. And now it's evolved into just being, you know, like Eric is a vegetarian, so that's what I kind of like. I've changed the meaning. So the basil represents, you know, like green eating and like healthy, and I'm always chocolate. But it basically just means, I think it's like my relationship with people, you know, like the people that come into my life and how I like work my way through that with food. So it evolved. So it started off as a travel blog right when I came from Italy and I graduated and I was with this person. But now once I'm in Boston and this is when me and Eric's relationship flourished and that's when we like moved in together, then it became like this healthy, you know, like how do I as an omnivore, I like to leave it open, celebrate or how do I like meet my, you know, cravings or like satisfy myself, but still, you know, answer to his like dietary, you know, needs. And so it was just this, you know, conversation around a table type of energy.
I love how your blog has had this journey just as you have had this journey.
Yeah.
And now that I think about your cookbook, it's so interesting because all these different facets of your life are represented in the cookbook. You even have a pizza recipe
in there. Yeah, I do.
And you have touches of things from your obviously earlier days. You've got those roasted vegetables with the barbecue sauce. Mm-hmm. You've got to talk about this one thing that you have, which I wanted to make so badly, but I didn't have time. The oatmeal cream pies, but instead of filled with cream, they're filled with cheddar, like some kind of cheddar cheese mixture.
Yes.
And that was like your dad's favorite thing?
Yes, it's so weird. He would take the, you know, the oatmeal cream pies, and he would put a slice of American cheese on top of it. And he would eat that as a snack all the time. I don't know how he feels about me saying this right now, but that's what, you know, that was like his favorite snack.
Well,
and
it's in your book, so yeah, it's not a big secret.
You're right, it's not.
And you open the book with it. It's your very first recipe.
It was so it was so ugly. And I remember trying it the first time. I stole some of his pies and I grabbed a slice of cheese and I like ran behind his truck and I was like, come on, we're gonna try this. Like, he makes it look so good. You know, like when people enjoy something, you're like, oh my gosh, like I can taste it. And no, I just really had no idea what I was in for. And I tasted it. So it just didn't work because of cheese. Well, the cheese was like fake, you know, and it was, I don't know. It was like, it just tasted cardboardy, you know?
So you elevated it.
I did. And it tastes amazing to me. Like, I think that recipe, the flavor is just on point because, you know, like the cheddar, the saltiness goes really well with the sweet and the cinnamon. And like, I don't know if you've ever had like, this is a pretty popular combo now, but just apple pie with like cheddar cheese. Yeah. Crust. So, I mean, that's kind of that same concept with the cinnamon and the cheddar. And it just, I don't know why it works. It just works really well. Yeah.
So you didn't call the book Chocolate for Basil. A lot of bloggers just take the name of their blog and put that on their book. Instead, you called it Black Girl Baking. What's behind that title?
Okay, well, that...
Aside from the obvious.
Yeah, well, when I moved to Boston, I felt pretty alienated. Yeah, like just, I was the only black person that I saw in that space, and we're also living in an area that was, it's kind of a segregated space, you know, and it took me a while to process that, but also I was going to grad school, and I think that was interesting to come from such an artistic background, and then like get totally immersed into an academic space where it's really competitive and it's really, you know, everybody wants to impress you with how much they know, you know? And that, I remember feeling really just out of place in so many ways. And I saw, and this was around the time that the Black Girl Magic hashtag was kind of like gaining popularity. And I saw it and it took a little bit of time to resonate with me, but once I understood what it meant, you know, like how it, the message that it was trying to get across, I kind of took it and I felt empowered by it, you know, it became, what it meant was that as I am right now, you know, I'm beautiful and I need to embrace that you know, like I don't need to be perfect. Like life is a process, you know, and we need to celebrate the journey. And so that's what this whole book is about, because I don't consider myself a baker, but I think baking is so, I don't know, it's just like such a release, you know, like I think I have so much fun there, and I didn't want to think about this is the standard, you know, like this, I need to follow this recipe to be able to have fun in this space, or I need to follow these rules and be this rigid as baking sometimes feels, you know, to be able to celebrate this thing, you know, just as I want to celebrate it. So it's just about being who we are and loving that. And I just gravitated towards that. And I thought that was really beautiful. And I wanted to kind of like scream that to people and say, you know, like, this is my space, this is my lane, like, I want to do whatever I want to do with it, and I don't feel like I have to, like, check in with you and see if this is okay, you know? So, yeah, it's just about doing your own thing, breaking the rules, and, like, you know, feeling beautiful while you're doing it, and not feeling like you need to be perfect, you know? So it was a process, and I think that I think the book represents that process. Like, you feel that process while you're working through the book, too.
But I do think you've tapped into something bigger. And it kind of reminds me of when we started Cherry Bomb back in, I guess we had the idea for it in 2012, that we knew there were all these women in the food space, but they just weren't getting the recognition that they deserved for whatever reason. Yeah. And that's part of why we decided to do the magazine. And I feel like Black women in food are having that moment right now where... Like back in 2012, I was like, where are all the women? Like, I know they're out there, but they're not being celebrated. They're not the ones being written about time and time again. And I sort of feel like Black women in food are having that moment when you're out there, but the media isn't paying as much attention as they should. And that's changing, and it's changing pretty quickly. And there's just an incredible movement of women in the baking scene, running restaurants now, chefs. You name it.
I see it. I'm watching it right now, and it feels amazing to be a part of that. Yeah, like, it feels amazing to be a part of that wave. And I think that it is, you know, like, it's social media. It's us, like, reaching out to each other. It's us saying, hey, I see you, you know, like, I want to support you. And I get that. And I just feel like we have to stand tall in whatever it is we're doing and not waver. You know, it's that, like, I get a lot of women that are like, yeah, Black girl magic. Yeah. Like they see it, they feel it immediately. And it's just like, you do your thing. I'm going to do my thing, whatever field that we're in, you know, and, you know, food is really big right now because I think there's so many stories because food is attached to our identities, you know? And so I think that the more that we understand what we're eating and why we're cooking things and why we're excited about it, and we start communicating that way, the more we understand who we are, you know? And so that's why I think it's really important that we as Black women, you know, kind of explore in that space because we can learn so much so quickly, you know? And so, yeah, I'm really excited for it. I'm really... I know that it's just the beginning, you know?
Well, you really, truly are doing your own thing. And I can point to one recipe in your cookbook that illustrates that. And that is the chocolate chip tofu cookies. And as I was walking around Whole Foods last night to get all the ingredients, I was like, where is the silken tofu hidden? Because I need silken tofu for these chocolate chip cookies. And I made it last night.
You did.
I never blended tofu. So I blended my silken tofu and I put it in the fridge overnight and it's waiting for me when I get back home.
Wow.
I'm going to make them and bring them to the party tonight. So you've heard me talk about this already, but we are having a really fun event tonight for Jarell at Smith Canteen in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. It is on Smith Street, and she will be there from 5 to 7 signing copies of her book. We'll have fun treats from the cookbook. Books Are Magic will be there selling copies of Black Girl Baking. Thank you to Books Are Magic. And Whole Foods and Williams-Sonoma are supporting the event. So thank you to Whole Foods Market.
Thank you guys so much.
Williams-Sonoma.
I'm so grateful.
We're so excited. It's going to be a really fun time. I'm sorry we're running out of time because you and I could obviously talk for a really long time, but you'll just have to come back at some point. If you are not in if you're in Brooklyn, you better come to the event tonight. If you're not
you
in
Brooklyn, yes.
If you are not, you can find Black Girl Baking in all, you know, major bookstores, probably a lot of indie bookstores, on Amazon.com, everywhere cookbooks are sold. Jarell Guy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Carrie. This was a pleasure.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, including the Kaltbach cave-aged Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux. Thank you to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. We record our podcast each week in a shipping container in the back of Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I kid you not. We'd love it if you could leave a review of Radio Cherry Bomb on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and now Spotify. Let us know who you'd like to hear on a future episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, I'm Jean Armstrong from William Saloma. You know who I think is the bomb? Amanda Haas. She's our test kitchen director at William Saloma. And the reason that I like her, no, let's say love her, is her passion and her commitment to No Kid Hungry.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.